Hello, everyone. This is Dark Journalist. What a fantastic episode we have in store for you tonight, which is X-Series 231. This is Atlantis, Automatons, AI, and Aliens, and drawing heavily on the Mystery School predictions of what we have coming up here in the 21st century for us to look forward to and also to battle with. And obviously those battle lines are being drawn as we look at things that are coming out right now and showing us that they're kind of reincarnating this entire version of the Atlantean things. And we're going to get deep into that through the figure of Edgar Cayce, the Sleeping Prophet, and his predictions. This is going to be something that really takes us to another level so we understand what the automatons are and how that links up with AI and the Eighth Sphere. I wanted to get into something about what's been going on in the UFO field as well, of course. We've had a lot of these, you know, non-disclosures, as we've talked about. And what I see going on here is that they're trying to appoint and anoint this figure, Lou Elizondo, who we've reported on heavily now in this program for the past 7 years since he came out touting these various things. And I guess it's more like 8 years now, in fact. And it's kind of amazing because people are finally catching on. You have little waves of this from time to time. The latest is Russ Coulthart on News Nation saying, oh, you know, Elizondo has these relationships to Clapper. Yeah, hello, Dark Journalist 2020. And we put all that information forward for a reason, which is you do have incredibly high stakes. And, you know, and anybody who gets to the point on this, I'm behind 100%, which is the bottom line is that people like Elizondo are controlled by the intelligence community. It's just a fact. And then we have those people having their strings pulled by someone else in the background. So you see, this gets us into very deep, deep territory in terms of forces that are here on planet Earth and what is actually going on in relation to space and advanced technology. The exotic technology, the apotheum effect, the things that we've brought forward are now coming home to roost here as subject matter. And a lot of the walls of secrecy are being sort of drawn down. The problem is that there's an incredible push to whitewash so much of this. And Elizondo is right in the heart of this. And what they're trying to do is appoint him as a UAP czar, which is somebody who on a National Security Council level would overlook a number of the things in relation to the UFO file. Now, this person, as we've identified, you know, it's Clapper. He dedicated his book to Clapper. He is a counterintelligence agent with over two decades, CIA, DIA, and a host of other groups that he's been a part of, including Space Force. The big thing when they rolled out Elizondo in the first place is they said, well, you know, this guy, he's a whistleblower, and he just can't stand the fact that that government won't take his UFO research seriously. And he's standing up for his friends in the government, you know, who lost their jobs, and now he's standing up and losing his job. So one of the earliest things that I found out was that he didn't lose his job at all. In fact, when I tracked down his background, he was still working for four different government agencies, and he was never hit with any of these questions. You know, he was hit with all the softballs of Richard Dolan and George Knapp and all that, asking him how it felt to be such a great heroic whistleblower and all these types of things. So none of that is journalism. None of that is research. I don't know, you know, what those people got together in the background and decided to launch this guy, and the intelligence forces that were moving through him somehow were attracting them in. But that entire UFO field collapsed like dominoes and let through this CIA agent to manage disclosure, which was ridiculous. And we fought against it. And all these people, you know, in the research field on the UFO side, and it's kind of a bozo field. Let's face it, it's not very deep. These aren't deep state researchers. They're not particularly good. But the ones who can't have that excuse, who do have a little bit more of a background, they have a little more to answer for, I think, in terms of launching this Clapper Elizondo exercise upon us for so many years. Now, we've called it out here, and we've put it on the record for you, because the idea lurking in the background, and this is something that nobody who's superficially touching upon this is pointing out, even if they're pointing out that Elizondo is just a counterintelligence agent launching a false UFO disclosure, there is something in the background lurking, which is the emergency powers aspect of this, which is where I think all of it goes, which is the Central Intelligence Agency, in collusion with the NGA and the NRO and others, are looking to launch a sky event, an emergency powers move that would instigate the continuity of government program, which is complete and absolute martial law. Now, there is no question that once the COG goes off, that's it. It's actually that the NORTHCOM commander becomes the entire ruler of the United States. And another thing that goes on is he's part of NORAD. He's the leader of NORAD, the COG commander, and he's the COG combatant commander and the commander of NORTHCOM. So he's a three-time triple winner there in terms of a national event of an emergency. Now, as you go into emergency powers and see the setup of the continuity of government program, it's very easy to see that there are only certain categories originally that were going to set off continuity of government and that kind of martial takeover by the military. And most of them were related directly to a nuclear event. And that's, in fact, why they built the entire continuity of government system in the 1950s in the first place. They had this thing go out and they were building up the highways in the 1950s, and right underground is a kind of a shadow version of what they were doing on the top. They were tunneling out all of the bunkers and everything else they would need for a secondary government in case, and I mean in case for the fact that there was an atomic attack from the Russians at that point. And so you could say, you know, it was entirely plausible, made sense, and all the rest of it. The problem is the continuity of government program became a sprawling and sprawling and sprawling program. And when we get into those types of details, they are rich in the background. And we can see less and less oversight over time with, you know, everyone going all the way back to the Kennedy administration being concerned about this. And it was, in fact, President Kennedy who famously allowed the White House to be used to make the movie 7 Days in May, which is ostensibly about a COG commander taking over and using all of these tricks to gain emergency powers and to deflate the role of the president and all the rest. So this thing was on the minds and people as that thing started to grow in the background. And people in that national security state were looking at this as an opportunity in case everything got out of their hands, which apparently it's starting to look more and more like it's going to unravel as we get into the future. Now, one of the things I can say about the continuity of government program is it's the program with the least oversight inside the government. And this has been brought to the public's attention over and over again by researchers like Professor Peter Dale Scott, who is pointing out literally that we know very, very little about the program, but we do know that it was activated on the morning of September 11th. And in fact, we have Dick Cheney going directly into this underground bunker, and you know, he comes out 2 months later with the Patriot Act. It's a little bit odd, you might think. So what we have there is a whole setup on the national security side. And one of the things that Professor Scott pointed out to us is that every deep event in American history, going back to the Kennedy assassination, which he refers to as the first deep state revolt against the White House, including the Nixon, Watergate, Iran-Contra, 2001 bombings, and the entire takeover of the financial system, the financial coup d'etat, as it were, of 2008, 2009, all of these different things had COG personnel involved. And I've been able to extrapolate that out further and also point out the fact that the COG people, when they get into these positions, and right now the COG commander is General Guillo, and his predecessor was actually part of the original 509th bombing squad. And that squad, its history goes all the way back to Roswell. So there's always this kind of UFO stamp around these people. We have to keep those things in mind, which is the UFO threat that these people, the Elizondo types, have been pushing. And then the continuity of government program that would be the answer, you know, for this if it got to be an emergency of these UFOs coming in and attacking. This is the whole point of the UFO threat exercise. The people in the background, we've pointed out, we've done the shows on them. They've come forward and try to tell every researcher and every news organization, don't talk to dark journals, whatever you do. And we've pointed that out. Even famously, David Grush, who in the background contacted me, and we had these long discussions going over things, you know, literally was saying, I couldn't come on your show because Chris Millen, you know, controls the whistleblowers and he wouldn't let me do it. So, you know, this is just part of the history we've laid out. And those of you who've been watching the show are aware of it. Well, it seems like all this is coming to ahead as all of these, you know, News Nation, everybody else is saying, oh my God, you know, Elizondo is the counterintelligence agent. Woe betide, you know, what's going on here? Listen, so we pointed it out, they were under orders not to report what we were reporting. It's very simple. Otherwise, this stuff would have been out, you know, years ago because we've been putting it on the record for that long. So what you're looking at is a control system. And on one hand, you have in the Congress these people who know nothing about the UFO file coming forward and saying, we have to get to the bottom of that UFO file. And UFOs are demons, you know, and trying to cater to these different factions and different political groups. And all the while in the background, there's this force laying things out and saying, UAP, keep the money train going. It's all going to come out. The breakaway technology is going to break in. We're going to do this. So we've been looking for genuine UFO disclosure, you know, and any kind of truth movement around the UFO file would do that. But you can't accept one that's run by the CIA, the DIA, the NRO, and the NGA. It just doesn't wash. You need a citizen-run panel that might be reflected in something like Congress or a government body, but it has to come as a citizen up, as a boots up movement, not a top down disclosure. And that type of disclosure that we're seeing and the idea that Lou is going to be the UFO czar is absurd. But he did get in, and we've heard this, we've reported it over the past few months, that he got in very close with Trump's son, apparently Donald Trump Jr., and weaseled his way into this idea of being a UAP czar. The idea of a UAP czar doesn't make sense either. You don't need a UAP czar, in fact. What you need is the government to open up its own file that it has in relation to this. And you need the congressional committees that were set up to do it, to take the right people and not to just sit there and go on a sentimental journey running these UFO committee hearings, getting a lot of selfies for Burleson, Burchett, and Luna. I don't know what the goal of some of those Congress people are, frankly. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me because they have all the tools at their behest. They could subpoena people. We've even pointed out those people and sent them directives about who they could at least look at in relation to this. And really, it seems like they're very content to just float on the surface of things that were really being raised maybe in the 1970s or something in relation to secrecy, the CIA, MKUltra, and all that. Well, that's great, you know. How about you get the JFK UFO assassination linked to the CIA and the X-Protect group and put that in there? That way you can study the JFK part and the UFO part at the same time and really kind of cause an earthquake in the deep state. What do you think about that? Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is X-Series 231, and it's great to be here with you. We do have a totally different topic coming up for you in the second half of this, which is the Atlantis automaton link and all of the things that are going on now with the kind of Frankensteining of this technology, biology, spirituality mix that is going on here. And we're going to do that through the figure of Edgar Cayce and all the work that he did in relation to Atlantis, some 900 readings dealing with Atlantis. He gave closer to 15,000 readings overall, and just an astonishing history there. Of course, we have the anthroposophical work of Rudolf Steiner and Helena Blavatsky before that in theosophy, giving us that foundation. And there's an incredible explosion there if you study it in the 19th century about Atlantis. And everyone from politicians to mystics and authors and researchers, something was going on. And the word was being doled out that there's an older piece there, and it was coming forward. And you know, one of the things we put on the record is that the mystery schools were prepping the culture, keeping the secrets over time and letting it out in these different places to move the culture in a direction where they would understand their own past. And I think one of the most interesting things that I've run across in relation to the idea of Atlantis in the modern times, looking back on it and really seeing that human history. And, you know, that is the real disclosure, or far beyond UFO disclosure, which is Atlantis disclosure, because that is humanity and the incredible things that we could do before we had this kind of cataclysm and the amnesia that came with it. And now we're kind of coming back into this situation of revisiting the entire thing. Well, one of the things that Rudolf Steiner had to say in relation to this is quite fascinating. What he said was that in the subconscious mind of the individuals reincarnating now, coming back, are all the technological marvels, medical advances, and other things there waiting in that subconscious, and that there would be attempts by, you know, scientists and forces of power on Earth to tap the subconscious of those individuals to get and reenact so many of the things that happened in Atlantis. And that will bring us to the automaton conversation. I want to round out what I was saying in relation to COG, Lou Elizondo, James Clapper, and the intelligence agencies in relation to the UFO files. So that's where we're going to go next. I can't tell you what a case of deja vu it is for me to have to be laying out this on Lou Elizondo yet again. As over and over it comes up, over and over these controversies get raised, over and over the research that we've put out there, people catch up to it like 5 years later, 6 years later, something like that. That's too long. That's too long. We've put it on the record. Elizondo has lied publicly on multiple occasions, including holding up false UFO pictures that he knew to be false, deceiving the UFO community in general, talking about a program that he led, which he didn't lead. It was not a program that was paid. It was an exercise for influence, and that people like James Clapper were involved. So Elizondo is a completely imperfect candidate for this, the biggest liar on the planet, counterintelligence agent, trained liar, the best liars. These are the best. And when we think about that, that puts us in a whole different field when it comes to the UFO file. The UFO file can't be managed by CIA intel officials who are notorious liars. You need honest, dedicated researchers, citizen journalists, and you need the whole thing to come from the citizens, and you need Congress to respond to that. That's where it should go. All the intelligence people need to do is give the public the records, the things that they hide, and we're not going to take them seriously by long shot. Who would? I mean, isn't that very much like going to a serial killer for, you know, comfort or something? It doesn't make any sense. Why would you go to the agency that is most notorious for its lying and getting America into wars, you know, all the way back to Vietnam and, you know, Iran-Contra, weapons of mass destruction. Remember all that wonderfulness? How about the, you know, false Iran push now with, oh, Iran wants a nuclear weapon, when Tulsi Gabbard, when she got in there, said, oh, no, they're not even trying to make one. Well, she's out, right? So I think that gives us some idea of what's happening. And I know that there are people in that administration, including Bobby Kennedy, who really, you know, they're not buying this. There's some other reason in relation to Iran, and there's no justification for our efforts in relation to the war in Iran now. It's just an absurd mess. The only thing that Trump can do is try to get himself, you know, extract the United States out of that mess and admit that the forces that got him into it, the neocons and all the rest of it, belong to another era, a failed era. And if he doesn't, then he's going to go, you know, sink right down in the polls with that. That'll be the albatross around the rest of his presidency. And Trump, too, will have been for naught as it will all get into this vortex. So something has to happen there. I think it's interesting we get around the UFO file because Trump was showing this. You know, he's got the background. We've talked about this before with Uncle John Trump. And, you know, his uncle was in charge. Or he was the protege of the man who was in charge of the UFO file. That was Vannevar Bush. That's where the Tesla piece comes in when they sent John Trump in to study the papers of Nikola Tesla. And he had to come out and very glibly say, well, it was all fascinating, but, you know, basically it was just a bunch of hypotheses. No, I don't think so. I think that John Trump was somebody who was in the know about the incredible, extraordinary X technology, the exotic technologies that were in Nikola Tesla's papers, and also that were being studied as part of the UFO program under Vannevar Bush before the 1947 wave. That's when you got MJ-12 and the wider committees. But if you think about John Trump and how Trump, you know, has occasion to bring him up on almost every occasion, over and over again, especially when he's in a tight spot, he'll start talking and musing about the influence of Uncle John. And when we think about that, we have to understand that Trump is being very deliberate there, and he's messaging that this is where so much of his background and the exotic technology comes from. You know, it's absurd to suggest Trump is some kind of time traveling time lord. and we put these things on the record before. However, it's very clear to trace the history of Trump with the UFO file. This isn't just some, you know, loudmouth billionaire real estate guy who went from TV directly into the presidency. There's a deep history there that we've pointed out, including a very tight relationship with President Nixon. We're just coming off these deep episodes on Nixon, which I recommend, all about the Nixon time capsule in the White House. And, you know, I pointed this out that we were the ones who brought forward the idea that there was a tight relationship there through our own research. At the time, there was nothing for it. And as a matter of fact, most of the mainstream outlets pushed back against the idea completely. But we proved it out. And now the Nixon Foundation came forward and said, oh, yeah, you know, they had decades of correspondence, over 300 letters. You know, I found out that Trump had gotten Nixon an apartment in Manhattan and an office and all this stuff. So they were very tight. And the question is, did that tightness extend to Nixon's knowledge of the UFO file? I believe that it has. And I think that this is a lot, along with the Roy Cohn connection, of what President Trump has going into that discussion. And I think the effort, again, of Space Force, of the Golden Dome, which I have some very important things to put on the record about, are all about pulling that UFO file back under the executive umbrella, executive control, which is where it resided previous to the end of the Eisenhower administration, in which Eisenhower suggested to Kennedy, get it back. And Kennedy's efforts to get it back and even share some of it with the Russians ended up in his own assassination through the X-Protect group. These are the facts. These are the things that need to be studied in Congress, through government. That's real disclosure. You know, saying there are blips on a screen, you know, that look very grainy and are coming from, gun camera footage and things of this nature, that's fun. You know, that's fine, but it's not the real thing. They have incredible, incredible detail on the UFO file, including the fact that they've recovered many, many craft. We put this on record through the Blue program that President Kennedy had brought forward. We brought forward those documents. We presented it all in 2023. And that's Blue, B-L-U-E. That's the actual program inside the government for the UFO file. When we put that on the record, the government took a year. You know, all these things went off the rails. And we heard from all these counterintelligence people being like, where'd you get that name? How'd you get that name? And, you know, if you do the research and you talk to the right people, you're going to find things out in relation to the UFO file. It doesn't require government proclamations. You know, you can get very, very deep on all of this. And with Blue, I think it's fascinating. And we've done a number of episodes, including the documentary Blue Enigma, relating to JFK's period of managing that. Here's the thing that just needs to be understood. The government came out with their rebuttal in 2024 and said, oh yeah, we did have a program called Blue. That's true. But it was a crash retrieval program. It never retrieved any alien material or anything like that. No UFOs. Sorry. You know, moving on. Well, not so fast there. So Kona Blue and all the things that they said about Kona Blue were, you know, a whitewash, because we had raised this and they knew it was setting off those bells and whistles inside of the different places in that weird corridor between the intelligence agencies and the aerospace defense contractors. This is where so much of the geopolitics is directed. And you have to understand, you have one unit that's managing the secrecy around it and using all the intelligence tricks to do it. And then you have another unit of the aerospace companies who are utilizing that research. So, and that's how it gets into industry and all the rest. Those are the things that need to be put on the record in relation to this. The fact that we don't have that type of disclosure is a very, very big problem. And they, you know, they always have good excuses. Well, it was national security, or we didn't want the idea of an off-world culture to frighten our religions or whatever. It's been long enough for those types of arguments to have worked themselves out. The question is something else going on? It's not those two things. It has to do, in my opinion, with the apothium effect, which is a reality distortion effect that shows up whenever UFOs are around. You know, think missing time, think, you know, whole cities being blacked out and things of this nature. So there is something in relation to that reality distortion physics that carries with the UFO file that makes it, in the words of physicist Robert Saarbarker, the highest secrets inside the national security state, higher than the nuclear state. So when you hear them talk about weapons that go beyond time and space, and when we hear about them, you know, using teleportation and things of this nature, you know, you have to say you have to understand the environment that we're in. We're just in a totally different breakaway X technology environment. And they're going to come off with some version of it, some story of it, so they can break a story back into the public about why they kept all this stuff under wraps for 8 years. And they spent all your money doing it. Hey, everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. It's X Series 231. I do want to remind you, especially if you're new here, to go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our free newsletter. Now, that newsletter will keep you informed about all the things we have going on around the massive, and I mean massive, secrecy and censorship that we've been experiencing on this program. And they do try to censor the shows that we do using a variety of methods. It's pretty well documented. The reason I think goes very deep too, which is we do let these things out, and then what do you do once it's out there? So they like the ability to sift through it first, as it were. But you can get around all that. Go to darkjournalist.com, sign up for a free newsletter, and make sure that you stand up and be counted so that you get it directly. That's our direct pipeline and gets around all of the nature of the secrecy. Okay, now on to Edgar Cayce, Automatons, Atlantis, AI, and Aliens. That's a lot of A's there, but they're all going to pay off as we go deeply into this subject. Okay, now again, we've done so many things in relation to Edgar Cayce, and I can just say this, that you know, Cayce, during some 50 years of his life, gave these readings, over 14,000 readings, and some of them dealt with medical issues, for example, and you know, they would also deal with the spiritual backgrounds of the people involved, their reincarnations, their many lifetimes. And the spectrum of knowledge and the spectrum of information over time is just extraordinary. If you look at his life from 1877 to 1945, in that period of world history, there are so many things that happen. World War I, World War II, the Great Depression, all of these things Cayce is right in the middle of, and yet he's projecting outward to another period that we'll be looking at. And he's giving us basically what humanity is going to need for that period going forward. What we see in the Cayce readings is this incredible sort of impelling force to look at the story of Atlantis. And there's so much more information, although there's great information in all of the mystery texts from Theosophy and Anthroposophy, as I mentioned. Cayce's really the most comprehensive story when you get around to this, because there's nothing on the level of Edgar Cayce talking about the Two-Eyes Stone. Now, the story is, Cayce gives it, that Atlantis had developed this Two-Eyes Stone network, which is an incredible technological network, which was based around a six-sided figure of a crystal. And this was the power source, the power-generating source for the entire island. And as it turned out, that for the entire, it was more like the entire continent that turned into islands. But what happened over time is they developed this incredible height of technology, including the ability to fly ships anywhere they wanted to go. They also had teleportation. They had the ability to fly through things and all the modern conveniences of everything that's going on, you know, from television to video and everything else. They had it all. Now, when we look at it and we look at the Atlanteans in the background that Cayce is giving us, he's giving us these readings now in the 1920s, 1930s. And there's no hint, really, that there's a culture that sophisticated back there. Cayce's giving us the whole background. And the real crux of it is that he's giving us the background and saying, here's what's coming in. You guys have already done this, and you're all coming back to do it all over again and face off against this incredible development technologically, without actually destroying yourselves in the process. Now, how accurate is that to the kind of artificial intelligence reality that we see ourselves going through right now? This idea of kind of a world brain that's going to control things is just absurd. And you know, it's gone far beyond, in terms of hubris, but also they haven't really gotten the consultation or the approval of the public at large. They're just moving forward with that kind of Belial push, you know, as the Steiner work would say, the Aramonic push to bring us all into that mechanical, technological consciousness and separate us from the much deeper, the spiritual consciousness in the heart of this as we look at it. Now, Casey brings in the story, the figure of Rata, who is this priest who is working with the Atlanteans and is a high priest in Egypt, who had come in from Carpathia and this, you know, region of Iran. And he's unusual right off the bat, because what we're seeing with Rata is he is, according to the readings, without father and without human father. And his mother is a daughter of Zu. There are all these references here that he's part of a Nephilim group or something along that line. He's definitely not a standard individual. And he's also a gifted psychic in that lifetime. And what happens is Rata understands that the Atlantean destruction is going to happen. And he goes to Atlantis and he meets with the priests. And they interact and have this incredible back and forth about how to preserve the knowledge in three separate halls of records that will be placed in three spots around the earth. Under the Sphinx is one, under the right paw of the Sphinx is one of those hall of records. The other one is off of Bimini, which was part of the Poseidia Island, which was the last stronghold of the Amelius group fighting against the Belial group. And then there's one more now, and that one's in Yucatan. And it's there, and it's beneath the temple. So those three will all be opened, apparently, at the same time. And we've done a series of episodes called Pawgate, which get into how the paw is the significance of the mystery group that hid these very, very important Atlantean history records. But what Casey indicates is that they also hid the information about the Two-Eye Stone, the worldwide power grid that the Atlanteans had. And this is why I think there's so much geopolitical stress around the Two-Eye Stone. And we've seen that the CIA investigated the ARE and sent in their own double agents in the 1960s trying to get information on the Hall of Records. Well, that's a little bit unusual, you'd have to say, but not so unusual if you understand what the intelligence agencies are about when it comes to ancient powers and the ancient sacred relics and things of this nature. Understanding that there's a missing technology link and that there's a kind of amnesia about how far we had arisen in the past. So when we get into this, we're starting to see that, you know, a lot of the battles over the Sphinx and Zahi Hawass being part of the government and the whole Gizagate aspects that we've got into on a couple of different occasions. I'm going to play a clip here of a documentary section directly on this that we filmed for Pyramid X, which is the documentary we put out recently. It's getting a fantastic response. Deep, deep information on Giza Gate, Atlantis, the latest discoveries on the Giza Plateau, which they're getting through space radar, and also the deep, deep understanding of Casey's work finally getting the recognition that it deserves, that the Atlanteans did come into Egypt and that Egypt is largely a legacy culture of this advanced Atlantean culture that was, you know, sinking beneath the waves because the Two-Eye Stone, at least in Casey's version, had set things off unintentionally and they were destroying all of these different things. They were, in effect, blowing themselves up and pulling the island down beneath the waves through the warlike activity of the Belial group using the technology. We'll go to this clip and then we'll come back.
So what is it that you refer to the Giza Gate, and who is suppressing important discoveries in Egypt right now? Like right now.
Right now. What's happening now? Actually, there's a news story from today suppressing the story. So you're exactly right. Here's the thing. Here's why I call it Giza Gate. And it's a very interesting, winding labyrinth of a story, but I'll try to sum it up this way.
You can do it.
There's a group in America who supports the Casey research work, and they support and spend lots of money on archaeological digs in places like Egypt to prove Casey's theories. So one of the things that they did is they put two very interesting people through college and placed them in Cairo to be their men in Cairo who would get the real story for them. So it would support Casey's work and his predictions and all the rest of it. One of those characters was Zahi Hawass. The other one was Mark Lehner. Lehner, by the way, is retired now. He's over at he's over by BU. He has an office over there. So, but Lehner was a high school dropout. And the Casey Foundation was like, you know, you're very interested in this stuff. We think you'd be good. They put him through college. They did the whole thing. Hawass also had kind of an unsteady educational background. And the Casey Foundation said, we'll put you through Cairo University, University of Pennsylvania, all these other places. So they did. They paid for it. So these guys go over there. They know all about the Casey readings. They've spent time. They're close to the Casey family. They go over there in the 1990s and they become kind of the big shots. They control the Giza Plateau. They rise in the ranks. Little by little, they start making it very difficult to do digs anywhere around the Sphinx or the pyramid. And they publicly trash the theories that Casey has put out about Atlantis and all the rest. They're like, there's no evidence of an ancient culture. Forget about it. So what happens is Hawass joins the Mubarak government, and they make him the Minister of Antiquities. And he throws all of these archaeologists out, and he starts doing these deals where they're million-dollar deals with National Geographic and all the rest, where he invites them in to look at this, and like he's the curator. And they do all these stories about him as Indiana Jones and all this stuff. In the meantime, Lehner is saying, oh, yeah, all the Casey stuff was wrong. And, you know, it's traditional dating. It just, you know, the pyramid's 2500 BC, and there's nothing here, nothing to look at. Now, there's a geologist who's also from BU, Robert Schock, is a great researcher. And he realized that there was a weathering pattern on the Sphinx that was rain-based. It was a water weathering pattern. The problem is there hasn't been rain in Egypt since 10,500 BC. You have to go all the way back there to get it. So he's like, the weathering pattern shows the Sphinx, the age of the Sphinx is 10,500 BC. And then he said, I don't know anything about Edgar Casey or whatever, but I can tell you for sure that this is it. So this is the battle that's gone on for 20 years. And a number of people have been involved, Robert Bavall, Graham Hancock, and others. And they always had this iron gate to go up against trying to get more information about Casey's Hall of Records. Now, that group, Lehner and Hawass, know all about the Hall of Records. They know all about the Casey readings. And they even get the Casey Foundation, even though they publicly trash Casey, they get the Casey Foundation to continue to fund digs around the Sphinx and all the rest. The thing that they've done with the information is they've searched for the artifacts. This is part of the archaeology wars. They've looked for the Hall of Records. They've looked for the Atlantean stuff. They have not shared it with the ARE, with the public, or anything. These are the Casey Foundation people. They put them there. And what I think is fascinating about these guys is they're still, not Lehner anymore. He's not around active. But Hawass, he's the first guy who came out and said, the space radar story can't be true. Egyptians built this pyramid. It's not based on an ancient culture before the Egyptians. And he's the one who's coming out and saying, I'm going to push back against these other scientists that are coming out against this. So there's an incredible block there. But if you look at the Mubarak government, you know, Mubarak, he was in prison for many years for all the corruption. And he took Hawass into his cabinet. And Hawass, they had a number of cases against Hawass, bribery and all these other things. So you have a very corrupt situation there managing this ancient artifacts and the ancient civilization and the human origin story. So that's a big problem. And I think it goes deep. And I think that they need characters like that to deflect the public around what the actual age of the Sphinx and the pyramids are. With the space radar story, which remember, that story only came out about 10 days ago.
Yeah.
That story is going to be undeniable scientific fact for this. So then these people over here who are controlling access and maybe have been digging for that Casey information and digging for this stuff for their own governments, for their own corruption, I can't tell you how much money is in archaeology. You know, if you could, you know, go back and find King Tut's tomb back in the day. That became this incredible thing. But every discovery of a temple or whatever it happens to be, it's television specials, books, and everything else. So there's a whole system that feeds itself on keeping that story going. And if you can't, if the kind of third rail is talking about Atlantis or Casey or any of that stuff, you can't go near it because you've built up this whole scientific thing. If you start talking about there's a civilization back there and it was more advanced than we are, that's a real big problem.
And so, we all know egos, yes, you know.
Exactly. That's Gizagate, because they're Casey people. And it's funny, because tonight I brought the book that Lena wrote about Casey and Hall of Records, and I'll show that to you when we're done. But, you know, just to show that these people know all about, you know, oh, Casey's supposed to be some far-out guy who's like, you know, some crazy psychic predictions, forget about it. And yet, there they are, being funded through universities, going there on Casey scholarships, and trashing his work in the meantime. So that, for me, is Gizagate. There's a lot of corruption levels going on there. And those two people should be called out professionally for taking the money on one side and biting it on the other. You know, and they're very happy to trash his work.
That's amazing. Take money, but
exactly.
Your work is wrong.
Well, what's interesting to me in particular with Lehner is that Schock, who's in a different profession, he's a geologist. So you can't, with your Egyptian history, deny his scientific dating of something, because he's the geologist.
Yeah.
He knows what the date would be. He knows what the rain pattern, the weathering on the Sphinx is. So, you know, for me, that's a dramatic thing, that they were just blocking them and using their position to keep that story out because it supported Casey's version of the story. And you can't talk about Casey's version of the story.
Or else. Okay, so you said that many prominent political, historical figures and celebrities have been deeply involved in the search for Atlantis. Who are some of the main people involved?
This is fascinating because it seems to be something transferred over time among groups. Literary groups, sometimes political groups.
Celebrities.
Celebrities. John Lennon. John Lennon bought lots in the Atlantic Ocean because he believed, based on the mystery school work, that land was rising. And if that land rises, then it's in international waters. It's anyone's nation. Ernest Hemingway, we did such a thorough episode on the Hot Zone and Ernest Hemingway. And Hemingway's job for a while there was scouting all that between Bimini and Cuba. And Ernest Hemingway's brother, he buys a lot near Jamaica in the ocean, and he creates the New Atlantis with a flag and with a constitution and the whole bit. So there's an awareness, there are breadcrumbs, there's like footprints of this group over time. One of the people who you might be surprised, you've never heard of probably, who was vice president of the United States under Calvin Coolidge in the 1920s. His name was Vice President Dawes. That's him there in Panama. And what do you think he's doing in Panama?
He's on a mission. He is searching.
He's searching. He's searching for Atlantis, which he did for a decade. And this is one of the guys who set up the Federal Reserve. He's a very deep player. And there are articles in the New York Times, Washington Post, and all the rest, all about his travels and his obsession with Atlantis. And he was going to be the president, in fact, in 1928, but there was the whole thing about the Depression and everything else, so he never got to run. But there you have the presidential level. If you look at Henry Wallace, who's the vice president under FDR, he's a theosophist, one. Two, he's on a search for Atlantis because he's realized that the Mayan language is so similar to the Egyptian language. And so there's this thread in politics through the secret societies and through these other groups like we were talking about. I think Dawes is particularly interesting because one of the things that he did when he wasn't satisfied after a 10-year search was he petitioned the Vatican Library for all their information around Atlantis. And he sent a Yale researcher in there to get that information, and we never got anything from his report of what happened. But obviously there's some understanding that the Vatican archives hold the key to Atlantis. And it's funny, this is how I'll back that up. We did a whole section in our last Hacking Atlantis episode, you and I, on Paulina Zelitsky, who was this very fascinating Russian oceanographer who went to Cuba and then defected to Canada. And she found a whole underground, underwater city off Cuba. Well, it's very interesting because she wrote a book as a follow-up just recently called Dog Days in Cuba. And she had to put it all in mythical terms about this dog who wanders around Cuba. But one of the things the dog observes is that in 1998, the Pope comes to Cuba, which is true. Of course, it happened in real life. But he comes, apparently, because Castro tells him, I've found Atlantis off the coast, and I want you, with your Vatican Library information, to cross-reference what I've found with what you have in the Vatican. And she wrote the book as this kind of pseudo-fairy tale. And yet, she was there. She was in Cuba. She's the one who found the city. And she probably is still under a gag order, not being able to say anything about it. After all, she spent time in a Mexican prison for 30 days when they were trying to intimidate her to get her away from her studies there, when they had originally called her in and Castro had hired her to find Spanish galleons. As Spanish galleons is basically a key word for, hey, we're looking for ancient ruins off there in the Bahamas. And, you know, Spanish galleons is the kind of catch-all term because then nobody knows what you're looking for. Therefore, they're not on your tail.
Oh, 30 days in prison.
Oh, yeah, they intimidated her pretty well. So much so that when I offered her the chance to be interviewed and talk about all this, she said, I'm not sure that you can change what's going on there at the cover. And I said, well, you're an important voice. And archaeology dropped the ball because when you discovered this city off the coast of Cuba, because it was a Cuban story, it hit everywhere. And so nobody could deny the story. The only thing they could do is get you out of the picture to get rid of the story. And then archaeology, they didn't, you know, they were instructed, don't go into this. But it's very clear of what she found. So these are the ruins now, taking a look at here, of what she found off the coast of Cuba. Now, I don't think there's anything that you can say in terms of history that would allow for those types of ruins being off the coast of Cuba. And she said when she sent the submersibles down, what they found were hieroglyphs. And the reporter asked her what kind of hieroglyphs. And she said, Mayan hieroglyphs. So there's an older Mayan culture off the coast of Cuba, which is right there in that hot zone area. Well, what else is in the hot zone area? How far is Bimini from Cuba? They're very close. They're less than an hour away from each other.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, by boat. So, you know, we're talking less than 90 miles. Therefore, that Cuban find, the Pope coming in, all these things about Zelitsky is a gigantic story and supports the other half of what Casey was saying, which is there's a Hall of Records, there's a Poseidon Hall of Records off the coast of Bimini, and that all extended out off to Cuba. That's the hot zone area. So the ruins, therefore, are rising. Our technology is rising with the space radar, which is how we got the Giza find. Mm-hmm. At a certain point, it's going to be indisputable. And then what? You're going to need a different human origin story. So the question is, whose human origin story are you going to get? Are you going to get one based on the evidence? Or are you going to get something else? So this stuff is still suppressed.
The cover-up.
Yes. So National Geographic don't want anything to do with it.
Huh.
But there it is. And, you know, the whole thing about her company being hired by Castro, the background of it, it's indisputable. So therefore, they just are avoiding it to avoid it. Because whoever is actually doing the research, that's a different story. Because obviously somebody is researching.
Yes.
The automaton, the thing, the untouchable, those are the three names that Edgar Cayce came up with for these beings. And they were not human fully, and they were not fully mechanical nor fully animal. They were some mix of all three. So they could be referred to as cyborgs by the Atlantean scientists that were developed. And they are using this kind of cross-pollination of things to get them to be slaves, workers, and all the rest. But they don't allow them to be regarded as fully human or fully having a soul and all the rest of it. Part of the problem here is that souls were projected into these entities. Just like in the future, I'm sure we're going to see, you know, with Neuralink and with the robots that they're developing now, they're going to start to mix in the human composition with it. This is the thing that needs to be looked at and stopped by any kind of conscientious society. But this is definitely the direction that we're heading in. You know, we already know the amount of cloning that's going on in the background for body parts and things of this nature. So when we look at it, we have to take it from the Cayce point of view and really bring him now into the 21st century, and it fits. The whole thing kind of matches up like a key that locks into place. The question is, you know, where is this all heading? In the case of the automatons, they had made them into these beings. Now, when you think about the technology that's involved and you think, well, there were so many of them, and we know there was a huge effort under this Rata priest to bring those beings back over a generation or two to being fully human, to eliminate the animal influence, the mineral cyborg influence, and all the rest. The question is, did that work across the board, or are there still Atlantean offshoots out there? And does some of this Atlantean offshoot technology account for at least some of what we know as the UFO file? It has to be looked at, especially in light of the fact of the many references that Cayce made to the Atlantean technology of ships and flying, you know, lighter than air machines and machines that could go into space and all the rest of it. The Atlanteans had them all. They had anything that they could dream of, according to Cayce. We take ourselves down this road of how far it went with the automatons. And what would happen, there's one particular description of the Atlanteans coming into Egypt, and a lot of the Belial group are part of it, as their islands are going down through the incredible destruction of earthquakes, tidal waves, and the inundations that were occurring. They are fleeing. There's a gigantic egress over to Egypt. And these Atlanteans show up, and they have this whole army of things and untouchables that are doing all their work for them. And when they get there, they look at the native population of the Egyptians, and they say, hey, they're just like our things. We're going to make you into our things. And this sets off this huge war activity when the Atlanteans arrive and creates all these rebellious forces against the king and all the rest. It's a very interesting detailed history that Cayce gives us there. And that Rata is basically the figure in the middle who can see what's happening with the Atlanteans. And he's the force who understands both sides, because he's working with the Emilius group in Atlantis to set up the Giza Plateau and to lay in these hidden chambers beneath the Sphinx that go between what he actually said was the Sphinx and the river Nile there. That's where Pyramid X is. That's the Hall of Records. The Hall of Records is actually a pyramid, and it needs to be understood that way. It's not just some room under the Sphinx, but that's the entryway. This is what Cayce is pointing us out to, and let's keep that in mind as we go along here. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. This is X-Series 231, going deep on Atlantis, aliens, AI, and the automatons from the Edgar Cayce readings. What does it mean, and what were these beings, and what is the legacy of that as we get into the 21st century and looking at the kind of horrific monstrosities that they're planning on putting together now, like we started the show off with the Satyr robot. I want to remind you, especially if you're new here, to go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our free newsletter. As I mentioned, that gets us around all this censorship, but it's the best way to find out about the exciting, and I mean mind-blowing, interviews we have coming up for you this summer, and also the extraordinary docuseries. We have Pyramid X, The Craze in the Hot Zone, which is Atlantis, Bimini, Cuba, and also JFK and the UFO file. All of those and all the new episodes that we have for those, along with the X series every Friday night, all of those mind-blowing things right there in your inbox. Make sure you stand up and be counted. Go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for it now. Okay, so at a certain point, Rata sets up the Temple Beautiful, and the Temple Beautiful is to remove all these different things from these beings that have been projected into by these Atlantean scientists. And they're a mix, as we've said, of human, mineral, and animal. So you have some cyborg, some animal activity, and you have this, you know, whole history coming out later through the Greek myths of the various beings. And we see the various versions of these beings through history. And here's Casey saying, no, it's not mythological creatures from subconscious metaphor. This is what actually the Atlantean scientists had created, the Belial group. And by the way, they're all reincarnating here coming up in the 21st century. So as we get ourselves into this position of seeing this, we have to understand somewhere in our own subconscious, there's something locked in, very key, that can see throughout the histories of all the things that have occurred. We've already experienced these things. So it's already in the deep understanding of humanity what this is all about. I want to reflect back on this two-eye crystal for a moment. Now, here's what Casey said about it. It was spelled T-U-A-O-I. It's a very unusual word. And when Casey brought it out, nobody knew what it meant. They just knew that this is what he called the incredible, the terrible crystal, as it came to be known. But two-eye, basically, when we see the background of it, if you look at various interpretations, what it actually means is people of the stone. So two-eye stone, people of the stone. And the Atlanteans certainly, if that was their entire power grid, that's how it would be used. Now, what's interesting is that Casey is suggesting that there's a group of Atlanteans who worship and have this interaction with the outer realms, the saintly realms, and they actually prepare priestesses in order to be purified, to interact with the crystal, to get those types of transmissions the same way you get like a radio transmission. And, you know, you basically have this kind of spiritual factor to the technology. So the technology gets imitated by the other group, who are highly imitative but don't seem to have any kind of moral compass, and that is the Belial group. And they are responsible for the destruction of Atlantis, and it seems like they're heating up the globe now for their next round of destruction through the various space activities, etc. All of these things move together. Like I said, when you study things like the UFO file, in the mystery school work and deep politics, it actually all chimes at a certain point. Too often, we have these different sectors and they're all siloed out from each other, so we don't have a lot of interaction of these things. But you'll have people who understand politics very well, you'll have people who understand the mystery side very well, and you'll have people who understand the UFO file well. But the UFO file people don't know anything about the deep politics, unfortunately, and it's been demonstrated over and over again in my interactions with them. They just don't get it. Those are the top researchers in that field. They don't understand how that works. They just have this kind of blind thing about disclosure, which if you get CIA disclosure and things of that nature, what's the point, right? It's not even important. And it's not useful, you know. Actually, it'll set you back in a worse position than what you started in. The mystery part, which many people refer to as New Age and things of that nature, you know, there's so much deep foundation there. I'd love to see it brought to a deeper philosophical kind of level than it is at the present. And then on the political side, you see very often the deep politics people don't want to mess with the UFO topic because it is so far out, right? And they've seen that there's a regular clown show around the whole thing, and they just decide we're not going to deal with it. Unfortunately, copping out on that is not good, because it's an extreme advantage to understand that there is a UFO file, that there's a gigantic government program to hide that technology, to cover it up, And if you wanted any kind of clarification on that, just look to our 12 episodes on the missing scientists, okay? Because the missing scientists, especially General McCasland, was in charge of the UFO file. He was leading that effort at Wright-Patterson. And he had been in charge of the Roswell material, for example. And we, you know, how long have we had that since 1947? Well, it's almost 80 years. You think they've redeveloped it pretty well. It's taken a long time. His disappearance now, February 27th of this year, no explanation, no sign of him, certainly. And, you know, very little effort on the federal side with this. There are over a dozen missing scientists in a very short period of time, all associated with each other or in some way with the type of technology. A lot of that goes that each of them are working on. And a lot of that goes to what's going on right here, you know, because MIT and the murder of Luna Lorero is part of what destroyed and set this whole dynamic up. The destruction of his research, just neutron star mergers and the things that he was studying. And then as we've tracked it through the different teams that were working, the team that was working with McCasland, and how one of that member of that team had actually a patent on this metal alloy, which is what they use now. And this is the rediscovery of the memory metal from Roswell, which could not be burned, could not be bent, and all the rest. There's a whole piece there in that, in her disappearance, the disappearance of Monica Reza, who had the patent, and Melissa Katsios, who was the assistant moving that material. She's the administrator, giving messages back and forth, coordinating these people. And then finally, the meeting of McCasland the night before with Space Force before he disappears, and his assistant saying, well, you know, he definitely looked spooked. He was not himself. He was incredibly nervous. And in fact, the morning he disappears, he has a little bit of an argument there. The guy was installing the solar panel in his place just before he disappears. Something is off about what is usually a very mild-mannered general with a very steady affect. Those types of things and the answers to that, that's the real push around disclosure. The other things that you see, you know, UAP czar and Lou and, you know, is Lou better than Grush and all that nonsense. That's all just a CIA sideshow. Remember, the general is missing. He was in charge of the UFO file. Where's the general? What'd they do with him? That's a national security crisis. You don't hear anything about it anymore. Well, we brought it to the fore, and trust me, we'll continue to bring that to the fore because it's crucial. Because if you don't understand what's going on in relation to that, then you're not seeing the big picture in relation to the rest of it. So let's do this. We're going to I'm going to wrap this up with an overview of what happened in relation to the technology and how the technology was kept. We're going to see exactly what could be an over. We're going to see exactly what could be now something that crosses over into our understanding of the UFO file and the Atlantean connection as far as the technology is concerned. Remember, they both involve exotic technology. It is the tapping in to that technology that we're discussing here, and that the groups that we've referred to as the mystery schools, including the Rosicrucians and others, they are the groups who kept that information for a higher purpose. And they've been there in the backgrounds, moving the culture in different directions and experiencing incredible resistance from the groups and the mystery schools that are on the other side. Those secret societies form a backdrop for what I refer to as the mystery school wars.
So how does our modern world, speaking of, push for human augmentation through, everyone knows right now, AI and Neuralink, mm-hmm. relate to the disturbing legends of the Atlantean human hybrid, automatons, and Arvin?
What we have is, in Steiner's work and in Casey's work, a real foreshadowing of what's coming in the 21st century for us. And it's not pretty if it's not done properly. So this whole idea of an automaton is literally what you would consider a cyborg what they're talking about with these robots and all the rest. Well, it's very interesting because in the Steiner work, he talks about Ahriman and the Ahrimanic influence through technology that will hit in the 21st century. And the idea is basically to cut you off from your own spirituality and the idea of scientific materialism taking over. So he traces it all the way back to 1840, where a group in Germany came out and said, you know what? If it can't be measured or weighed, it doesn't exist. And they became the scientific materialists and dominated throughout Darwin and all that whole period. So the religious aspect of this was interesting because the churches and stuff were looking at this and saying, yeah, this is a problem. Because on one hand, you know, they had their own dogmas and everything else, but the scientific materialism completely cut out anything spiritual. So the secret societies and the mystery schools, and there are two different kinds, but the ones who were sort of looking out for the culture and trying to move the culture forward, took a look and said, you know, if we don't let out some of this information that we have, we're not going to recognize humanity in 100 years. And so this is what I've called the mystery school wars, where some of those groups are like, no, no, keep the secrecy no matter what. And the other groups were like, no, we have to let it out. And so you get a lot of weird things in the 19th century coming out. Spiritualist movements. Abraham Lincoln was a spiritualist. I'm going to show you a vice president tonight who spent all of his time and resources trying to find the Mayan link to Atlantis. So this whole thing has gone in these political circles for a long time. And what was taking place in that period was Blavatsky came forward in 1875 and developed theosophy, brought it over to America. Theosophy had reincarnation. It had psychic development, life after death, this idea of ascended masters, all these things that just weren't there. And in the heart of it was the Atlantis story. So there was a guy named Ignatius Donnelly, who was a politician, who wrote this incredible book at the same time Blavatsky came out, all about Atlantis. And so suddenly these things were coming into the culture, being placed in the culture to kind of reawaken everyone around this. And it's very interesting to me because what happens a little while after that is you get the incredible increase around scientific materialism. So, you know, psychology kicks in to such a level that there's a number of different schools of psychology, like Carl Jung's psychology versus Freud and all the rest.
Oh, I could tell you all of them.
Yes, indeed. This is the part of the lecture you should take over. But I will say this, that the idea was get people away from the spiritual thing. And because before that, you had New Thought, you had all these other things coming in, which are completely look at humanity in a different fashion. So when you get further along into the 21st century, the thing that we're looking at right now, the idea of augmenting a human so they become superior means you have to implant things in them. And this is where you get, exactly. And so, you know, Musk and many of these figures who are the leading edge on this, they're coming out and saying, hey, you know, it's for the good of humanity. Well, there's no doubt that the technology can do good for humanity. But unfortunately, as we've learned with the leadership structure, it's very often upside down in terms of their ethical values.
Yes.
So if the wrong people get their hands on that technology, we're in the same wreck that Atlantis took place. So the Atlantis piece comes in strangely here, and it's like you can start to see the threads laid down by the mystery schools saying, remember this story about your ancient past and you being advanced, but all of that becoming a huge problem. And the interesting thing about the automatons is it makes a big part of Casey's Atlantis history. So he's saying, no, no, it's not just that it's coming, it's that they did it back then already. And this is kind of a cultural memory that they are able to produce these beings. And the idea now, I've seen everything demonstrated from, I did an MIT demonstration for a robot bartender and watched the entire
thing.
Did
he get you some good drinks?
They had a thing, a dial where he would make good conversation. I kid you not. So obviously we already know the technology is interfering with a number of things.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And yet, we don't have any idea in general culture that this all took place previously.
Deja vu.
Deja vu. And so when you go back and look at what's taking place with the space radar that we opened with on this. Well, there's something involved here that I'm referring to as Pyramid X, which is the Hall of Records. Mm-hmm. And Pyramid X is beneath that structure of the Sphinx. This is what Casey identified. We're going to get more into this tonight. But basically, if humanity gets their hands on that information, then it's very different. It's a very different paradigm going forward. And we're not going from the whole, you know, civilization started 6,000 years ago in Sumeria. We're going a lot further back. And so that changes things. That's a consciousness shift that I think would be powerful, considering where we are at this point in the 21st century, which the future is not looking good.
No.
Could be. It could be.
Transparency could help. Okay.
I agree.
Well, that's what you're doing, right? Yeah. This is all transparency
that's
for what, everyone.
That's why we're here.
Okay. Well, so follow up. What do anthroposophical teachings of Austrian mystic Rudolf Steiner, who you mentioned, and Helena Blavatsky's Theosophy tell us about Atlantis?
This is it, because they were laying it out and they were putting it together. So 1909, Rudolf Steiner writes a book and it's called Cosmic Memory. And the book is all about the fundamental history of Atlantis, how it started, how it ended, and how Egypt and the Mayas and the Incas became the legacy cultures. The follow-up on that is the Casey work. And previous to that is Blavatsky's work. But they're all saying the same thing. Casey's the most expansive, I would say, on it. But here is Steiner saying, you know, at a certain point, this culture became very advanced, but they saw what was happening with the degeneration, the overexposure, and the temptation of the technology. So they took 1,000 of their best people, and who they went to Ireland originally to start another civilization. But eventually that group were the group that went into Egypt. And they became the legacy culture, Egypt with the pyramids and everything else. So Steiner's giving us that hint. But when you get to Casey, he starts talking about there's a hall of records that's been buried in Egypt under the Giza Plateau that's over 10,000 years old. Then Casey goes further and says, well, you know, the reason they placed it there was because they were doing archaeology in 10,500 BC. It was already an ancient sacred spot. So there's something about the plateau itself that made it ideal for what they wanted to do. And Casey is saying humanity, by reacquiring information about Atlantis and the Two-Eye Stone, is going to come back into a knowledge, a memory of this whole thing. And Steiner is basically telling us, well, you're looking at a culture where if you go into Atlantis, they were so spiritually evolved, but because the spiritual evolution that they had took place under the Amelius group, the other group that was the Belial group that imitated them, imitated their achievements and things, but use the technology that they were using to contact the outer spheres, the saintly realm, and that they had developed this for, they were using the technology for a totally different purpose. And that's where they actually originally split the islands into three islands and then caused volcanic eruptions. You know, this is where the whole Apotheum thing comes from. Because whatever took place in Atlantis, and I can tell you, I've talked to the best researchers, the best scientists, Graham Hancock, you know, Robert Schock and others, they say what had to have been a comet, it had to have been a pole shift, something devastating on that line. But Steiner says, no, it's not. It's not any of those. It is using the Atlantean technology and setting off a destruction. So the equivalent of us setting off our own nuclear disaster. And the remnants after the fact, what would happen to this culture? Well, I mean, people do a great job with the thing that they do, but they don't know, you know, most of us don't know how the technology works. Most of us don't know how the cars work or the planes work or anything. So if the society gets wiped out on that level, what will happen? It'll go back into a kind of a primitive state again, and there'll be a memory of when these things could have been done. Now, it's been popularized here and there, science fiction, Planet of the Apes or whatever. But I think there's a root idea there in the subconscious of humanity that something went terribly wrong. That's where the echoes... Because remember, the whole Atlantis story is based on Plato's account.
Mm-hmm.
Plato's saying, he's not saying, oh, I wrote this. He's saying, I got this through a relative who had been to Egypt and talked to the Egyptian priests. And it's a true account that 9,000 years before I'm writing, all these Atlantean things took place. And then the Atlanteans were taken out by the gods, basically. They disappeared in one day and one night, but they were the height of culture. Well, 9,000 years before Plato, it's basically 9,500 BC, Casey says 10,000 BC, these things link up, they add up. When you are looking at a kind of a clairvoyant version of this, and then Plato is basically a teacher. So he's giving you a historical account based on someone he knew who went and talked to the priests in Egypt. So it's not that it's some story that somebody made up. He's, you know, he's not giving us a story. He's giving us a history.
Yeah.
So we have that. And in all of the accounts, when you get into the Mayan story or our story of the flood or any of these things, there's an account of a great destruction back there and a small group that survived. So it looks like, you know, we're kind of heading into the possibility of that happening again. And I think that's where all the mystery school information has come out, let's say over the past 150 years or so. Because before that, if you talked about those things, you'd pretty much be burned at the stake.
You keep that reincarnation.
What is meant by automatons who labored in the experience? Were they individual souls developing, or was it a spiritual evolution? Answer, both and neither. They were the offspring of the sons of God with the daughters of men, or vice versa. In the Atlantean land during those periods between the second and last upheaval, when there was the great antagonism between the sons of Belial and the sons of the Law of One, a priestess of the laboring ones made overtures to the people for the acknowledging of the laborers to make their experience easier. These laborers were considered by many as things rather than individual souls. And as might be termed in the present, some indicated that the priest alone would be a match for those activities of some of the stronger or more forward Atlanteans, for they had brought with them, as had the priest, many things or individuals or entities that were without purpose or merely automatons to labor or act for the leaders in the various spheres of activity. By what power or powers were these early pyramids and temples constructed? By the lifting forces of these gas that are being used gradually in the present civilization, and by the fine work or activities of those versed in that pertaining to the source from which all power comes. For as long as there remain those pure in body, in mind, and activity to the Law of the One, there is continued resource for meeting the needs or for the commanding of the elements in their activities and the supply of that necessary in such relations. As the time draws nigh when changes are to come about, there may be the opening of the three places where the records are won to those that are initiates in the knowledge of the One God. The temple by Iltar will then rise again. Also, there will be the opening of the temple of the Hall of Records in Egypt, and those records that were put into the heart of the Atlantean land may also be found there that have been kept. For those that are of that group, the records are one. For it was these gases, these influences, that were used for what we call today the conveniences, as for light, heat, motivated forces, or radial activity, electrical combinations. The use of these influences by the sons of Belial brought then the first of the upheavals, or the turning of the etheric rays influences from the sun, as used by the sons of the Laws of One, of Siamelia's group, into the facet, or the activities of same, produced what would be called a volcanic upheaval, and the separating of the land into several islands, five in number. The sojourn was nearer to 50 to 500,000 years before we have even the beginning of the Law of One manifested. In Atlantis, the children of the Law of One, including this entity, Rhea, as the High Priestess, were giving periods to the concentration of thought for the use of the universal forces through the guidance of the direction of the saints, as would be termed today. There are a few terms in the present that would indicate the state of consciousness, save that through the concentration of the group mind of the children of the Law of One, they entered into a fourth dimensional consciousness, or were absent from the body. Thus, they were able to have the experience of crystallizing through the light the speech from what might be termed the saint realm to impart understanding and knowledge to the group thus gathered. The sons of Belial were of one group, or those that sought more the gratifying, the satisfying, the use of the material things for self without thought or consideration as to the sources of such, nor the hardships in the experience of others, or in other words, what we would term it today, they were without a standard of morality. The other group was the Emilius group. In what kind of vehicles did the priest and his retinue return to Egypt after the banishment? In what would be called chariots driven by the gases, for the Atlanteans prepared those that brought these back. The entity was the interpreter of the messages received through the concentration of the group upon the stone from which the oracle spoke from the realm of the saints. The first disturbing forces brought the first destruction in the continent through the application of spiritual things for self-indulgences of material peoples. Those were the periods, as were termed by the scripture, that the sons of God looked on the daughters of men and saw them as being fair. So we might be looking at here with the emerging of this consciousness around the UFO file and these other things, the key aspect, which is the raising of Atlantis and, the rising of Atlantis. And Casey had said it straight up, and here's the quote directly from him, that these are actually rising back up. And so we're going to have, the temple off of Bimini, which is also rising. And we've seen that since 1968, the Bimini Wall is what it's referred to. And land rising off the East Coast means that entire piece of Atlantis that was Poseidia is going to rise. We saw that in the work of Paulina Zelitsky, who we've highlighted heavily in our Hot Zone episodes. And it's very interesting because Paulina discovered off the western tip of Cuba an entire metropolis, not just one pyramid or one structure that was anomalous and they didn't know what it was, but an entire metropolis, a city. That was the story that was submerged, and that's one of the biggest scandals in archaeology. But it definitely fits directly with what Edgar Casey was trying to tell us about an entirely different culture undiscovered. And that is why there's so much of a craze in the Hot Zone, as it were, because when we're looking at that, we're seeing an entire background, an entire disclosure of humanity. This is the thing that they need to get their hands on. And that's why there are so many efforts around the human origin story that we're seeing, that they're just trying to take it, whether it's, relation to the UFO file or Mars or whatever it happens to be. They're looking at these different things to figure out how they can place themselves in the top of that chain and basically get rid of what is traditional spirituality and replace it with this, alien god or technological god or a false history of humanity, as it were. So we see a lot of those efforts, and I think a lot of this is because so much of the truth is rising in relation to it. So we have the two sides battling it out. The question is, where is all of this going to go? And we're right in the heart of it, I think, with the AI discussions, with the wars that are going on, with the revelations and the false twisting of the UFO file. These are the things, and this is the period of time that we're in for these types of clashes. Now's the time for the potent type of reporting in relation to this, and also getting rid of so much of the noise and the static around it. People going over a cliff with this CIA proclamation or this UAP czar, whatever it happens to be. We have to be in a position of looking at this and defining history as we see it now and seeing that there's a lot of manipulation happening, but this is the time to unravel the mystery around Atlantis, around the automatons, around our earlier history in relation to this, how the Ezekiel craft is actually an Atlantean craft, even though that's some almost 10,000 years later. who is keeping that technology and holding on to it in the background. That becomes a major aspect as we look at this. If we're to understand our own history, where we come from, and that whole entire piece around Atlantis that's reemerging. And, you know, so many of the things that they talk about, putting Neuralink in your brain and all the rest of it. In my opinion, those things are literally for the harvesting of the subconscious and the control of the mind, ultimately. And I think it's going to be a real red line where, you know, aside from medical use or whatever it is, the idea of putting something actually in your brain is going to be that dividing line between a whole person with a real true purpose from God versus somebody who's been manipulated into this materialistic reality and can be controlled as such. The tapping of the subconscious mind needs to be something that the independent media brings up and talks about in a fashion, instead of, you know, going over a cliff with the latest report of maybe Lou Elizondo knows where dead alien bodies are and will reveal it as UAPs are. You know, it's totally useless for humanity. None of that makes any difference. Any of the CIA people being at the helm would be a complete disaster of any of that anyway. But I do think this thing about the harvesting is crucial. It comes to us directly out of the mystery information. And that's something that's going to be crucial. Remember, if you know anything about the mystery school information, it is in fact the silver cord that resides there in the brain itself. And that is the pineal, pituitary, and Leydig cells, all connected through that silver cord, which gives us the humanity. When you interrupt that pattern with a brain insert, Neuralink, telepathy, and all this nonsense, your very soul is at stake. So you can see the most serious, serious consideration would have to be given for anything of that nature, as would the integration of human aspects into these robots, including actual cloned human parts and systems and things. That's where they're going, and that's why the story of the automatons, the things, the untouchables that Casey tells us is so important, that it was done once before, and the Atlantean scientists had done it because they had no ethics, because they were using the technology in a Belial fashion, and they've come back to do the exact same thing. And so we face this crisis in human affairs one more time. Everyone, it's been fantastic to be here with you for this X-Series 231. We will see you all next week and have a fantastic weekend. Remember, if you're new, go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our free newsletter. And never let it be forgot, once there was a Camelot and there could be again. See you soon.